Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! Welcome back to another episode of Three Black Halflings. I, as always, am Jasper William Cartwright, and with me today is...
Luyando Natty Lewis Nyao, but everybody calls me Unati!
And...
Jeremy Cobb, but some people call me Jimbo.
Hey, back strong with the nicknames. Love
that. That is a new one.
And today, I am genuinely so excited to say that we have with us the king of podcasts himself. Mr. Jeff Kanada is here. Holy crap. How are you doing, Jeff?
Hi. I don't know if I can take that moniker. That's a lot of responsibility, but I appreciate it.
Oh, my God.
You will come to terms with your own weakness.
Old Prince vibe.
Focus on your task.
Yeah. Just shut your mouth. No one is interested.
You think this is just a game?
The suffer and learn.
Let's make them even more black.
We're about to get into something real big now.
Hey, I mean, I was just saying to these guys before we came on air, I think I literally have listened to your voice at some point during the day, like every day for the last few years of my life.
Oh my goodness.
So many shows.
And he's not talking
awesome.
About the podcasts. He's actually bugged your house.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just been listening.
You listen to me more than my wife, I think.
Oh, brilliant. So we're so excited to have you on the show, Jeff. Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Absolutely. I love the show. Thanks for having me.
No.
Thank you.
Still kind of crazy to me. Like, I remember back when you like first liked our tweet and then you retweeted it and then you retweeted it saying that you liked the show. And for me, that was huge. So thank you very much for like championing us at the beginning. We've grown a bit since then, thanks to your help, which is awesome.
Congratulations, and just well deserved.
And now we're here, which is really, really cool. And I just wanted to say, basically, the reason why I wanted to reach out to Jeff is because back when I was in drama school having chats with my friends about, I was actually having a chat about diversity in film, and one of my friends was like, you know what, Jeff, there's this guy called Jeff, he's got a podcast with two guys who are people of color, and it's an amazing show, you should listen to it, which was obviously the Slash Film Cast. So I've listened to that like religiously for however many years, and then since then I've just picked up everything. And then this was quite a fun little fact. It was the week after Jeremy introduced me to Dungeons & Dragons that you announced Dungeon Run.
Oh, wow. Ooh.
And so I was like, my worlds are coming together.
I've been waiting so long for Jeremy to introduce it to you so I could do Dungeon
yeah,
Run.
Yeah,
sorry about that. I had to meet Jasper first. That was really what it came down to. But thank you for your
so
patience.
So inconvenient.
This has been all a part of an interconnected a time warp where you guys have been trying to get me into Dungeons & Dragons. I love it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of coordination on our part, but I'm glad it worked out.
It worked out.
Jasper William Cartwright conspiracy.
Exactly. Like an intervention, but for Dungeons & Dragons.
I think everyone should have that, though. I think the world would be a lot nicer a place if everyone just had a couple hours where they just went and played some Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah. I think that would be lovely.
Not a bad idea at all. Yeah.
So I wanted to get started. I just wanted to chat about your life as like a podcaster. You do so many different shows. Like, how did you start doing all of these shows? Was it like, was it an accident? Did you get, I know you obviously did the Totally Rad show for a while.
Yes, it was an accident. I fell, I hit my head, and I woke up and I went podcasting.
Yeah.
No, I also went to drama school. I got a degree in theater and was enamored with being on stage and being in front of the camera and moved down to Los Angeles to do that. But before that, when I was 14 years old, my very first job was writing for the newspaper. Huh. I actually had a weekly column as a professional writer at 14. Back, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners don't even know what newspapers are, but there were these things that this dead trees they used to deliver to your house with words on them. And I wrote a column in the newspaper reviewing video games. And yeah, oh, wow. And so that was my very first job. So I had been involved in the video game industry, you know, covering it professionally and interacting with companies. Then I went to drama school and sort of put that all on a shelf and, you know, set it aside for a while. And then when I moved down to Los Angeles and started doing acting gigs and trying to make my way as a performer, just by happenstance, so I guess it is kind of an accident, I met some folks who were friends with a lot of people on the G4 network. The G4 network used to be this, actually it's coming back, but it used to be a network all about video games and geek culture and stuff.
Cool.
And by pure chance, there was a number of them that had never played Dungeons and Dragons.
Hmm.
And so Dungeons and Dragons plays very heavily into my origin story. And they set up this game for guys who were sort of middle-aged dudes or, you know, early, late 20 dudes and had never played. And I was one of those people. I'd always wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons. But I literally didn't have enough friends to play the game.
That's always the trouble. And it's also the trouble of, like, finding people that you're comfortable enough to, like, out yourself as a massive nerd in front of. Like,
yeah.
You know?
Well, and I, you know, I'm a little older than all of you, and I grew up when nerd really meant nerd, and it was just kind of this horrible thing, and I was embarrassed about it, and I actually didn't have friends and wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons. So, as an adult, seeing that opportunity come up to go and play with a bunch of people who are also newbies, and we got a dungeon master to come in, and it was going to be this game at the offices of G4. And I walked into this room knowing only one of the people there, and I think there were six or seven of us. And two of the other people there were Alex Albrecht and Dan Trachtenberg, and I didn't know them at all. But in that day, over that 6 or 7 hours that we spent in that room playing Dungeons & Dragons, we all recognized each other as being buddies. Like, it became instant kinship of, oh, you're my kind of person. And we started hanging out after that. And then very quickly after we started hanging out, we were talking about movies and video games and geeky stuff and having these very passionate conversations about it. And Alex at that time was doing a show called Dignation, which was literally one of the first podcasts, one of the first video podcasts. And it was a massive success. It was huge. It was one of the biggest podcasts at the time because there were like 10 total.
versus the millions now.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine back then. Anyway, he was doing a video podcast for a company called Revision 3, which was founded by Kevin Rose and a number of other people.
Yeah,
and so he was like, you know, all of us having these conversations, we're like, this could be a show. I think this could be a show, us hanging out, talking about geeky stuff. And so we pitched it to Revision 3 and they said, okay, make us a pilot. And so we did a pilot, as a video podcast. Mm. And at that time, it's like I said, it's hard to imagine. This is 2006. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to imagine how primitive things were back then. There were very, very few video podcasts. Very, very few. YouTube did not exist. So the idea of delivering video was hard. And we decided what we wanted to do was virtual backgrounds. Green screen.
Yeah.
And there was no mechanism to do that. There were no plugins.
Yeah,
it was not
yeah.
easy. It was not something you could just do.
No Zoom virtual backgrounds.
God, no. God, no. There were no webcams. I mean, there were webcams, but they were like, they were very
the
primitive.
The grainiest things, probably.
Yeah,
like.
It was terrible. Anyway, so we figured out a way to do that. We sort of muscled it and figured out a way to do it. And we ended up winning a bunch of awards because nobody had seen anything like that, us on virtual backgrounds. And we ended up having the audience send in backgrounds for us to use. And it became a whole thing. And that show was very successful. So that's a very long-winded answer to your question. But that was the first show, the Totally Rad show that I did with Alex Albrecht and Dan Trachtenberg. And that show really was the beginning of everything else I did. And I went on to do Weekend Confirmed and tons and tons of other shows that I do now.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like this, I've got so many of the, I'm a big, big fan of We Have Concerns. I was so excited when you brought that one back. I was, really happy. So big fan. But I thought it'd be really awesome for us to talk about the Dungeon Run. Obviously, I think we like Dungeons and Dragons on this show. I think that's
established. Yes, I'm glad to hear that.
Just a little bit.
And obviously, Dungeon Run, I've been religiously watching this thing since episode one, because I was like, I'm coming for Jeff, and he's the DM. That's like I was excited. I was on Team Jeff the whole time.
Awesome.
And just wanted to talk to you about being a part of a show that is like sort of much bigger than, you know, a lot of actual play podcasts and shows, which are just like, you know, just friends gather around a table. You've got some amazing set pieces. Like I still can't get over the warden strapped to the bottom of the ocean with the tent. I was just mind blow. The tentacles were removing. I remember that was like a mind blowing set piece that you had made, and just like what it's like to be a part of something like that and to be the DM and have the control to really bring these creations, you know, to have amazing people with you to like bring those creations to life. I'd love to know what that's like. I think that's like end goals for all of us.
It's a dream job. It is a dream job. Yeah. I will not lie about that. It is absolutely a dream job. And I am fortunate and grateful every day to be a part of it. It is, it really was. And again, Alex Albrecht, part of my origin story, one of my very close friends, he is the creator and producer of the show, and he came to me, you know, after we played together that first time in 2006. Over the course of our friendship, we got into playing Dungeons & Dragons, and the DM that we played with on that day, you know, it was hard to coordinate things, and so somebody said, hey, let's figure out somebody else to DM so we can play more often. And all eyes sort of turned to me and went, Jeff, you want to do it? And I was like, I'll give it a shot.
There's always that one friend. I was like, I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're the DM for life.
And then you're the DM for life.
I know that's Jeremy's origin story as well.
And then everybody's like, hey, you guys want to play this weekend? Jeff, can you whip something up?
Yeah,
and I'm like, it takes a lot to whip things up.
Yeah,
you don't understand all the work I put in.
Exactly. It's only 4 hours, and I'll only plan 20% of what you guys are actually going to do, because you're going to go off on a tangent. And
exactly.
Like...
yeah. I'll plan all this stuff, and then you'll decide not to even go that direction. Yeah. Anyway, so I say all that to tell you that Alex became the head of production for this company called Caffeine, which is a streaming video service. Yes. And he started wanting to make some original content. And we had wanted to make a Dungeons & Dragons show for years and years and years. Now he finally had the opportunity to make that happen. So he called me and he said, hey, do you want to be part of this? And I said, yeah, it'd be great. He said, it's going to be 10 episodes. So just use like one of the old, he literally said, just use one of the old scenarios that you ran us through as a group. And we can just repurpose it and use it for this group.
Oh, wow.
And I went, yeah, I think I could do that. That's no big deal. If he said it would have been, you know, we would be 63 episodes.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think I would have been. I would have been too intimidated, I think. I would have been like, there's no way I can do that.
That's a crazy, that'd be a crazy undertaking. Like, the idea of being like, oh, this is just going to run indefinitely. Okay.
I think I would have been very intimidated by that, but I'm so grateful that it's still going. But at that time, I was like, yeah, I can do 10 episodes. That seems right. I can do an arc that works for 10 episodes, no problem. And then it really was, okay, we want to do the dream version of Dungeons & Dragons. We want to use Hollywood production to make this look like a television show. We're building a studio. We're using, you know, a jib arm for big crane shots. We got a full crew that used to work on G4 TV that knows how to make television. Yeah. We're going to use this prop department to create the minis, like you were talking about, to create the models that they're going to play on. And we're going to cast the show in LA. It's not going to be just a bunch of friends that play, which I love live play shows, and almost all of them are friends that already play. And I know that that works and is a great way to do it. But Alex's vision really was, we're not going to just use people because we like them and they're our friends. We're going to use them because they're the perfect person to play the character that we want in the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a really interesting process casting the show. We saw tons and tons of actors. I will be completely honest that one of my biggest regrets about the show is that it is not more diverse. It should be. Mm. It should be. We failed in that respect. But having said that, I don't know any of the actors that I would give up. You know, we have an incredible cast of actors that we got. They all play together fabulously. They're not just good actors. They're not just good D&D players. They're really good people. And I think that shines through on the show. I think the show has heart.
Yeah.
And we've all become really good friends over the course of the, you know, year and a half that we've been playing now. So I'm very proud of it. And it is a dream job, because all of those elements we really went with trying to find the best show, not just a game that would be fun to play with friends, which is great. And I don't want to take anything away from that, but we attempted to craft a show. And I think we play the game thinking about the audience. The audience is interactive and helps control the story. Mm-hmm.
So did you guys written the characters before casting people?
No, they all came in with characters. And that was part of the process of casting the show, is like, which characters do we plug into this story? Which characters fit together in the best way?
We saw
dozens and dozens of actors, and they all came in with characters. They all presented the character. They talked in character. And then at the callbacks, we called back a lot of people. And at the callbacks, I ran a session about 20 times. Wow. I ran the same short session about 20 times with different groups of people, and we cycled them in and cycled them out and put them together in different. It was a wild day.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely crazy day.
You're almost casting the characters themselves as opposed to the actual thing, which is really fascinating, actually. Like building, almost like trying to build a party. We were actually having a discussion previously where we were saying about how building a party could be such a sticky thing in Dungeons & Dragons, because you have like one session where by the end of it, you're supposed to be an adventuring band of heroes, you know? And so it's like, it's quite an interesting thing to be like, how do we actually build a party that would complement each other, that, you know, play to each other's strengths and weaknesses and have flaws that other people can support? And I think that's a really, and it definitely comes across in the show, you know? I think the arc of Argo and Lily is gorgeous. Like, I love it so much.
Oh, thank you.
Just the way that his character has kind of grown, and again, like grown with us, with the audience, and like what our expectations are. And I think it's been really lovely to see that. I think you get, in some cases, more of a journey because it feels like a shared experience, a shared journey, as opposed to just I'm going to play my version of this character and that's what's going to happen, which is what you get with sort of other shows.
I agree. And I'm amazed, honestly, what these actors are able to do with their characters. People have been very complimentary to me and the fact that I play all these characters and kind of craft this world around them. And I'm grateful for that. I'm very proud of the work I'm doing. But I look at the work that the actors are doing, the players are doing in the show, and I kind of don't think I could do it. It is the level at which they play one character for they've been playing for 400 hours now. You know, it's insane. And that the fact that you come to this character and you build it and you grow with it and it does change, and they're all, I mean, every single one of the characters now compared to where they were in episode one is a absolute evolution, and it's extraordinary. And it is an extraordinary thing to be able to have that consistent, not leap to the end of that journey, to build it slowly, to reveal things slowly, to play the truth of the character in the moment every time and build on what happened last time and really create serialized storytelling. I think they are doing some exquisite work, and I'm privileged to be part of it.
It's actually one of the things I feel like I struggle with, especially as a DM. I always want to like show my big, like the big things. I'm like, oh, I've got this. This is the idea. Yeah. And I always want to just throw it in. And I'm like, no. You gotta let it simmer. Yeah. You gotta let it be there for a while. And absolutely, it feeds into moments then where you're like, where suddenly the story kicks in and you just, you know, you're blown away by, oh, that was like in episode 10. They referenced that. Yes. And it's always the most rewarding moments.
Absolutely. Yeah. Patience is a hard thing. And you have all these wonderful secrets. And the best thing about a secret is revealing it.
Yeah.
But letting it be a slow burn. I am such a fan of slow burns.
Yeah.
And I remember when we first started the show, the character of Fahima, so many comments on the show about, oh, she's so frustrating because she's so young and impulsive, and she does these things that make me so frustrated. And I remember writing back to people in the comments, just watch, because it's going to be so satisfying to see this character go from being this young, impulsive girl to this powerful woman wizard.
Yeah.
And we are seeing that, right? We're 100%. In that right now. She is growing into herself and learning from all her mistakes. And it's just a testament to the beautiful work that Jessica has done playing. The hardest thing I think for Dungeons & Dragons players, if they really want to role play, and I will say as a side note, you certainly don't have to play the game this way. You can play the game however you want to play the game. There's no right or wrong way to play the game.
Yeah.
But I think I play this way. I play a character as basically me with a funny voice. You know?
That's how
I play
like
my characters, right? But our players are so good at playing their stats. We have players who are so smart, like Ron Ogden.
Yeah.
A smart guy who knows Dungeons & Dragons, DMs himself, has played for many, many, many years. But he's playing a low int character. He has a low intelligence orc that he's playing, and will often make the less than ideal choice. He will often make the choice that gets his team farther in trouble.
Yeah, and often it's like, to his detriment. Yeah, 100%.
Yes, he knows that's not the smart choice, but he plays that low int. Same thing with you know, all the characters like that. Jessica does that all the time, playing a character who is impulsive, who wants to protect animals because that's her backstory. She knows that that's not the smartest thing to do potentially for the team in that moment, but she's playing the truth of that character. Jared Kajak, who plays Civ, he plays a low wisdom character. Mm-hmm. So he's a smart guy. He's a smart, but he makes bad choices.
Yeah, so chaotic. I love him.
it's and to me that is magic, because I have a hard time with that myself because I want to do the smartest thing in that moment. And I go, oh, that would be a bad thing to do. And anyway,
I'm exactly the same. I'm like so chaotic as a person. And I find it so hard to sit and just be like, nope, this is like, I'm going to do the optimal thing. I'm not going to like, like the opposite where I literally, all I want to do is just charge into stuff and be like, yes. But actually like, you know, this is why I've always avoided playing spellcasters, because they're so squishy and low hit points that I'm like, if I run in and be all impulsive, I'm going to die. You know? So like, I always struggle with it. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah, Fahima gets criticized for that all the time, but that's the character she's playing, right?
That's her character.
This fearless girl who wants to prove herself. It's awesome to see, and it's not easy to play, and it's even harder to play when you have an audience of people watching you and criticizing you potentially, you know.
I mean,
we have an amazing community. We have the best community in the world. They're very supportive and very
thank you so much. I consider myself a part of the community.
Thank you. It is. I say it at the beginning of every episode. Now we have the best community on the internet, and I believe it. It's
incredible. So great. And the chat is always amazing. This actually really leads me on, because I planned to ask you about The Amazing World of Ayn. I love what you've created with The World of Ayn. But it's even more mad now to hear that obviously that was not planned to be the sort of full-filled world that it is. How the hell did you turn that from 10 to like 60, you know, and beyond episodes of stuff? Like, because I imagine the idea of setting out, if you like know what the world is, creating something very like rigorously to be like, this is gonna has to stand the test of hundreds of episodes. But to start thinking this is just gonna be 10, and now it's gonna be, you know, I'm just, what happened for you in that moment when you were like, okay.
That's a great question. I did have a moment. So about 3 episodes in is when I heard from the production team at Caffeine that they wanted to keep the show going, which is a little earlier than we told the cast, but they told me and they went, okay, we want to go past 10. Can you expand the story? And I went, yeah. By that point, I'd fallen in love with the whole thing. And I like, no, I never want to stop this. I love this.
Yeah.
But I did have an incredibly stressful week or two where I just tore it all apart, pushed the boundaries of everything. The good news is that I had built a world that was bigger than the 10 episodes, right? I had built stuff in my head. We made a map. Like, we put stuff there that I didn't even know what it was, but it felt like good texture, right? Yeah. It felt like stuff that needed to be there. And I tell you, it has been an absolute joy problem solving in that way. I have gotten a new appreciation for the writers of Lost. I still criticize that show. I was very angry at that show.
I was furious. I was livid. Right? I was actually livid. I wanted my time back. All of those hours back.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. But I have kind of grown. I think they did a poor job of it, and I'm trying to do the job that I wish they had done. But I do have that appreciation of like, okay, we put a thing. You know, we put a polar bear in the thing. We're not really sure what it is. We'll figure that out later because I just don't have time right now. There's a lot of that juggling that happens as a DM where, and one of the magical things about this creative process for me that I've discovered is that I will set myself up for an alley-oop without knowing it.
Yes.
Without knowing it.
Yeah.
I will, and it's a hard thing to explain, but I will do a thing that feels right in the moment, but I kind of don't know why. I kind of don't know why. And I just kind of like put it there. And I don't know why I'm putting it there, but it feels right and it works for this moment and it's okay. And then later on, I go,
oh, that's what it is.
Oh my God, that was a setup for what I'm about to do.
Yeah.
That DM intuition.
And I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know I was setting myself up. And it's kind of like working retroactively. It's kind of like, okay, I put the polar bear in. And then later on, I'm going to use the polar bear. I think the folks at Lost like copped out a bit with specifically with the polar bear, but with other things too. And what I'm trying to do is make it all pay off, right? Make it all, when I put in a polar bear, when I put in my version of something that's that is a setup, I do want it to pay off well.
Yeah.
I want it to really work. But that problem solving is the fun for me. Yeah. It is the fun of going, how does this world work? And part of that problem solving is dealing with the variable of 5 players who are throwing things in that I could never have predicted.
Absolutely. I actually had one of those, the alley-oop moments last night we were playing, and which again leads me on to the next thing I was going to talk to you about, which is time travel, because I'm always really fascinated about time travel, and I know you have we have concerns, so I wanted to ask about that. But basically, the characters in our campaign that Jeremy and Unati are a part of ended up influencing the past. They didn't sort of travel into the past, but they were basically able to sort of very rudimentarily like communicate across time zones. And ended up changing an item that they received in the very first session that we ever played. And like
That's
basically
cool.
One of the characters like reached into his bag, pulled out this book, and it was a completely different book. And they were like, "What?" And like, it was such an awesome moment where I was like, "Hey, why don't you look in your bag?" And they were like, "What?" And I was like, "Yes, this is gonna be so cool!" Like, and it was totally one of those moments where I was like, "Yes!" Like, I can't believe that played out, but because I trusted what I'd built and I trusted the players, I just went with it. It was always gonna something was always gonna happen. There was always gonna be that payoff. Like, it's and.
Yeah,
I think it's really interesting to hear you say that. So, time travel. Recently, they've traveled back to man the ship of Whitebeard, and I just really wanted to know. I'm also trying desperately not to do the Whitebeard voice, but it's my favorite.
You have my permission if you'd like to.
No, I won't be able to do it justice. I've built it up already too much. But yeah, like, how do you approach time travel in Dungeons & Dragons? Because it's awesome.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
And there's a few things that have been brought in. Like, there's a school of magic now, like Dunamancy,
right,
which deals with time. And so, like, what was your approach to dealing with time travel, especially when you've got like characters' backstories and things like that?
Well, I'll tell you exactly how it happened, because I kind of fell backwards into it. I never intended to have the characters time travel in this story.
Mm.
We were moving right along, going about to crescendo into this wonderful set piece that I had been building to and really excited about. I mean, it's been in my head since the beginning, for almost 2 years. And then COVID hit, and we went into quarantine. And you talked about the big models that we make and all the physical stuff in the show. And we realized that we weren't going to be able to do the show in the studio with the physical proximity of people during quarantine. So the production team came to me and said, hey, we got to do a virtual version of the show. We got to do a version of the show with everybody at home. First of all, very grateful that we could still make the show at all during quarantine.
Yeah.
But we had basically a week, and I said, okay, we'll do a virtual version of the show, but we're literally about to step into, I mean, the last episode we did before COVID was opening the door to this big, massive place that I've been building up to for many, many episodes. And I said, okay, I'll make you a deal. We'll do the virtual version of the show. Because there was talk about, okay, we thought COVID's going to last a month tops.
Yeah,
2 weeks maybe.
Yeah.
And there was talk about, like, maybe we'll take a hiatus. Maybe we'll just we'll show old episodes and we'll comment on them. Maybe we'll bring in a guest DM and just do a couple of episodes as a different show for a while. We've had all these different ideas.
Mm-mm.
But the production team was like, no, we want to do our show with our characters moving forward. And I said, okay, I'll make you a deal. I'll do a side quest. I'll do the show virtually, but I'll only if I can do a side quest and take a break from the main thing so we don't go to this place yet.
Sure.
And we have the characters do something else. And they said, cool. The only stipulation that we have is that the players play the same character. So we don't want to invent new characters in this side quest. So we talked about it, and there was some discussion about, oh, it would be cool to see backstory of the characters. We could, like, go into their past and see backstory. And I thought, oh, that's a really cool idea to do. You know, you could do flashback episode. But the hard thing with a flashback episode is this stipulation about they have to be the same characters. Because
exactly.
If you do a backstory episode about Lily's childhood or Civ's growing up, you can't have all of our characters there.
Yeah,
because they got to be new. They got to be there. The characters they met in their life, because we've seen the moment these characters all met each other. So, how to do that? How to do backstory with our characters? Well, time travel, right? Time travel is the way to do that. I thought, well, let's do it like Quantum Leap. They leap into other bodies, so it's still them. They're still behaving the way they are, but we're in the past in other bodies. And
I love Quantum Leap.
Isn't that great?
What a good show.
Oh, man, I grew up on that show. I love that show. And so I thought, okay, we'll do like, you know, two weeks, maybe a month of this cool backstory. And the trick of it was going to be, it feels like it's going to be a backstory for one thing, and it's actually a backstory for something else, right?
Yes.
That's the magic trick I was trying to pull off was they think they're going back in time for one reason, and what we really find out is the backstory of a villain.
Yes.
So that seemed like a really fun idea. Little did I know quarantine was going to last
long?
6 months. So I don't, again, in the same way that I don't think I would have started the show knowing we were going past 10 weeks, I definitely wouldn't have started a time travel story knowing we were going to go for 22 episodes of it.
Yep.
But it turned out to be really fun and really gave me a lot of juicy things to work with and ways to reveal things that I was going to reveal in the main story in a different way,
sure.
But do it in this context of being back 22 years in the past. But it also introduced all kinds of new problems that were the juicy problem solving stuff where the team is like, well, what if we kill the guy that we know exists in the future? And I was like, oh boy.
Oh, here we go. You know, strap in.
What is that going to do?
Damn it,
Jeff.
Yeah. No.
All of that is to tell you that my answer to your question is don't do time travel.
Do it.
It will mess with you. But also, it was loads of fun. And This last Wednesday, as we were recording this episode, we completed that time travel side quest. It didn't turn out to really be a side quest. It was very much a main part of the story now because it revealed a lot of things that are very important to our main story. But we have completed that. So if you're listening to this show and you're curious about our show, this is a perfect jumping on point. This next Wednesday, September 9th, new episode we'll be streaming. It'll hit YouTube on that Friday, the 11th. And we've created a comprehensive recap video. It's 20 minutes long. It tells you everything you need to know to jump into our story as they're now entering the dwarven fortress of the four former forges, which is this place that I've been building up to for many, many, many episodes. They're about to step into it on the 9th of September. They'll step into it. And we have this 20-minute recap video that's going to play at the beginning of that episode. It's
amazing.
It's also going to be on YouTube by the time you're listening to the show. It's on YouTube. You can find it on my website, jeffcanada.com, which is spelled with two N's and one T. It is a 20-minute video. It tells you everything you need to know to be caught up and ready to jump into the story. So we're really using that as a way to bring people into the show that maybe are intimidated by how many hours of content there already are.
That's a whole thing though with like actual play shows. It's like, it's a lot. Like if you dive into any of the big ones, it's like, oh, okay. They're on like episode 100 and something. It's, oh, okay. That's so many hours.
I really endeavor to try to make every episode a jumping on point. We do a recap at the top of every episode, but this one is like, really significantly. And we got this 20-minute video. It's really well done. I teamed up with a guy named Braba, one of our fans, to make it, and he uses clips from all the shows. It's
Awesome.
Phenomenal.
That's so cool.
So I'm really excited to be, to be returning to the main storyline. And we're still in quarantine, sadly, so we're not going to be in the physical place. But that's only because it doesn't seem like there's any end in sight for that.
Yes.
So time to come back.
Oh, boy.
Yes. Well, we've got we've actually got our first live show as well coming up on the 12th, which is nuts.
Well, that's amazing.
Yep. We're playing
congratulations.
The Wagadu Chronicles campaign setting. It's a new Afro fantasy campaign setting.
Wow, cool.
If you haven't checked out, Jeff, you need to check out because it's
Really good.
Is it rad?
Honestly, the artwork
it's
will
really
blow
amazing.
You away.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like,
I'm Googling it right now.
Yes, do it.
They just released a 200-page
intro.
Intro for free.
What?
The art is incredible. It's got like new versions of races, except now they're called lineages. Oh, a whole new cosmology and lore and
There it is.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. And
oh wow, it is
like,
beautiful.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. We come full circle on it. And Jeremy was saying that he'd seen this like advertised like a year ago, and it wasn't really a thing. And now we've been talking to the guys who've created it. We did an interview with them on one of our last shows, and so we're. Oh,
Whoa. The lion blood?
I'm a lion!
Masters.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
We just did some character creation, and that's what Unati wants to be.
Yeah, exactly.
My god. The Daima? I'm pronouncing that wrong.
Daima,
sure,
yeah, that's what I'm going for.
Gorgeous.
So people are gonna sneak peek on what our characters are ready for Saturday.
Oh yeah, Jasper's playing a Daima, yeah.
I'm playing a Daima, yeah.
Yeah, they're like moth people who worship death.
Yeah, gorgeous looking art. My goodness. They have moth wings? Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like during like a full moon, they can just fly for like a lot of... It's awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we were really excited about that. And so we're doing a live show where it's like literally just the four of us. So we're getting together and going to get to play, which, we're really excited for that. So if you have any tips on doing a live, we've never done it live before. So we're like, let's see how this goes.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it. It's the best. It's just a little bit like, working without a net, but that's okay.
That's cool.
It's fun. And, You're gonna love it. It's gonna be great, and you'll have the support of the people there, and you're gonna have a great time.
Amazing! I can't wait. Do you know what? I'm having the strangest sensation where I'm so used to like listening to Jeff that there's parts where Jeff's talking, I'm completely forgetting that I'm actually talking to him. I'm just like, oh, I'm just like listening to another show. This is great.
You're listening to your own podcast while you record it.
Yeah, literally. That is literally what's happening right now. So, Jeff. I don't know if you know, on the show, we always do a bit we call the Tales from the Table, which is where we ask our guests to share one of their favorite memories of a game, a previous game. This could be a favorite part of Dungeon Run. This could be a previously never seen home game. The more chaotic and stupid, the better. Ours tend to be really chaotic and stupid. So if you have anything, that would be awesome.
Oh man, there's a bunch from the Dungeon Run that I could mention that are all available to be seen on YouTube. But I'll mention one that no one has heard before. That's a fun just from one of the games I played back many years ago. There was a moment where we were playing, and one of the things I don't like to do to my players is use traps. I don't think traps are particularly fun unless you really signpost them, right?
Yeah.
You see that there's some reason you should be aware of traps.
So it's definitely your fault if you get caught in this trap. Because I've told you this is here. Yeah. Like, come on. Yeah.
The idea of walking onto a square and getting damaged. And the only remedy for that is... I walk forward 5 steps. I search for traps. I walk forward 5 steps. I search for traps. There's nothing fun.
But if you enter a hallway which has got holes on either side and clear pressure plates, then don't step on the pressure plates.
Do you know what I mean?
That's your fault. That's your fault. That's not my fault as the DM. That's your fault.
I didn't do that to you.
Exactly. Now we understand. But we were playing with a DM that was a little more old school D&D, where it's literally like, there's a trap there. And if you didn't ask me to search for traps, that's not my fault. You didn't know that it was there. So we were playing this game, and my friend hit a trap which caused a bunch of spikes to come up. He got spiked, fell down, it rolled a natural one, fell down a ladder, which had more spikes at the bottom, and impaled himself.
Oh no.
So it was like spike trap. I think it was like a dexterity saving throw or something caused him to,
reel
backward when he rolled a natural one, fall down the ladder he had just climbed up, land on more spikes at the bottom.
Double spikes.
And so he's impaled on the spikes at the bottom of the trap. And we literally couldn't figure out how to get to him because we couldn't do anything because there were spikes around.
Again, you okay down there, buddy?
Again, this is one of those DMs that is just trying to be a little bit mean. Yeah. This was not me DMing. Yeah. It was like, well, we're going to just keep going. Sorry about the spikes. He's just down there on the, like, skewered, like, a shish kebab, you know?
Do you need anything? Can we bring you some snacks? That's part of what we can do right now.
Yeah. Pretty funny.
That's brutal.
Pretty funny.
That is so brutal.
What a way to go.
Yeah, right?
Was that it? Was that, like, the end of his... Did that character die?
I think he died. I think I think he died and started a new character. Just, like... Just impaled on the spikes.
Well, I'm dead. I'm gonna bleed out.
Cool.
Exactly.
Don't worry about me. Go on.
Ignominious way to go, but you know, like I said, I don't like to DM like quite like that. I don't mean to be critical of my old friend who DM'd, but some DMs, you know, think that they're playing against the players. I'm not really like that. I think, you know, death and danger is a part of the game and is not something that you need to nerf necessarily. But also, I want the players to feel awesome. And
yes,
that's a memorable story that I tell to this very day, obviously, but I don't feel like it made for awesome.
But it probably wouldn't have diminished the story if you could have found a way to retrieve him from the spikes. That's the bit where you could have maybe, you know, like done something.
We needed like a telekinesis spell to pull him off or something. We were just all low level. We had no remedies. We had no ways to do it. Also, we thought
even
rope
wouldn't have worked.
I was gonna say, the rope, just pull him off. Like, that sounds more messy though.
Grab
the
rope. I think there was definitely a part of us that was just, you were so dumb to do that. We're just leaving you now.
We're just leaving. That's your own fault. That's your own fault for rolling a low dex character. It's your own fault.
Yeah, exactly. Your fault. You should have checked for traps.
Yeah.
Everybody knows to check for traps around the ladder.
Literally. Yeah.
No, not at all.
Literally. Oh, that's brilliant. Poor guy.
Yeah.
I would love to, because of all of your amazing experience in doing the Slash Filmcast, to tap into some of this knowledge. We do another section called Wiz of the Rings. We haven't done one in a little while, which is where we recast films, and not necessarily saying they're better before the internet happens. We're just saying that, you know, it would be a cool thing to see. So we like to do some gender reversals. We do racial reversals, all kinds of things. So we're going to do a Wiz of the Rings right now for Pirates of the Caribbean. So, yes, Wiz of the Rings, Pirates of the Caribbean, just sort of general characters from that universe is cool. I think there's a reboot coming in which
I heard it was Pirate 6, maybe.
Oh, is it not Pirate? We don't need Pirate 6. Do we need Pirate 6? Is anyone asking for another Pirates film? I started watching the last one and got about 10 minutes in and the building was getting dragged by a ship and I was like,
They get real bad. They get real bad real fast.
Like, the first one is such a good movie. Like, wow.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's incredible how quickly those things...
They become kind of parodies of themselves
really
at a
did.
Certain point, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
You never go all the way to the top. Like, they felt like they needed to up themselves every time and, like, get more and more ridiculous.
Right.
So
I wonder if the first one would be considered more of a classic if they'd never even made all of the sequels.
Probably.
You know what I mean? If it was just this standalone landmark movie.
Yeah, it would feel like, wow, this was really a good movie, and why didn't they ever make more of those?
Exactly.
I time traveled back here to prevent it.
Exactly. It's because, Jeff, this is the darkest timeline, and where everything eventually turns to, like, just shit. That's why.
Somebody gave Johnny Depp and Gore Verbinski a stern talking to.
If you ever nail time travel, Jeff, please do that for us. Just tell them to quit while they're ahead.
Yeah, no kidding.
Awesome. So yeah, if we have any suggestions, I've got a strong one for Captain Jack Sparrow.
I've got a good one for Captain Jack Sparrow as well.
Okay. Well, go on then, Yunati, who got?
She is no longer with us, sadly. But Brittany Murphy.
Okay.
Brittany Murphy. Oh yeah, she has that sort of mania
I had another female option for Jack Sparrow, which was Janelle Monáe.
She's amazing.
I just think she could do anything that she puts her mind to, because every time I've seen her in something or sing something or whatever, I'm just like, I'm in love. She's perfect at everything. I just think that she's kind of got some chaos. Like, she always, like, whenever she's, like, on stage, I'm like, she's got that live wire kind of nature that you need for Jack Sparrow. And I was like, I think that would be amazing to see her do that kind of role, like really get her teeth into a crazy role like that.
I was thinking that the Orlando Bloom part, Will Turner, just because he can do anything and I want him in every movie, Michael B. Jordan.
Oh!
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, I want him in every movie.
Yeah. I feel like your Michael good. B. Jordan is our John Boyega. Like, we're the same. We cast John Boyega in, like, everything.
I like John Boyega, but I'll take Michael B. Jordan over John Boyega in any movie, all the day long. Michael B. Jordan,
like, man.
Yeah,
in
he's great.
Like, whew, Black Panther, that fight scene in the waterfall, I was like, damn.
Yeah.
Like,
dude, what about both Creed movies?
Yeah. Oh my god, like, he's unreal. Yeah.
As far back as The Wire, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That might be my favorite thing he's been in.
Fruitvale Station. Have you seen Fruitvale Station?
Yeah, it's such a good movie.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It destroys you.
That's such a good shout. And I wouldn't feel like Will was just totally useless baggage the whole movie. Because I'd be like, oh, Michael B. Jordan can handle himself. That's fine. Like, he'll be okay.
I have a suggestion for Captain Barbossa. Keith David as Captain Barbossa.
Oh, that's so good. The voice, dude.
Yeah. The voice. That's awesome.
That would be good.
I recently discovered all the Keith David goodness because I'd put a tweet out on our asking for people if anyone could join your like D&D game, who would it be? Like any celebrity, anyone would join your D&D game, who would it be? Someone said Keith David, and I was like, I started looking at all of his stuff because I'd recently watched Community, and wow, this guy's like voice acting CV is extensively awesome. He'd be an incredible Captain Barbossa. Yeah.
And live action, and The Thing's a classic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not just because I want to recast Creed, but the Keira Knightley role.
Mm-hmm.
Tessa Thompson.
I mean, they've got so much chemistry, and you'd straight up believe it. You'd straight up believe it. Again, Tessa Thompson's another one that could just do anything.
You're not wrong.
I did also, Yunati, you threw this one out before, but me and Jaden had this conversation. Lakeith Stanfield for Jack Sparrow as well.
That would be cool.
I mean, because he can do anything. He's just anything.
It would be such a different take. Mm. It would be fascinating. Because he has that sort of. He has that sort of very underplayed energy, very sort of that kind of calm, and it would be such an interesting take.
Yeah.
It would be like instead of Keith Richards, if Jack Sparrow was based on Snoop Dogg or something.
Totally. Yes.
I had Constance Wu actually as an alternate casting for Elizabeth Swan.
Yeah, Constance Wu is great.
Constance Wu is good. Yeah.
That'd be fun. Yes.
I try to think who else I had for Elizabeth Swan. We mention her name every time, but Lupita, just again, like, she
Lupita
would be.
Lupita Nyong'o,
Lupita
Nyong'o. We could cast her as Jack Sparrow, man.
Or Letitia.
100% she could do. Especially after Us. Like, her performance in Us, as the red, the reversed version. One of the scariest, genuinely one of the scariest, like, on-screen performances, like, as an actual, like, villain. I remember that fight towards the end, I was just, I was mind blown. It was so good.
Yeah.
We joked around saying me and Jeremy would probably end up being I can't remember their names.
Pintel and Rigetti?
Yes, yeah, the two hello puppet. Like, yeah. I'd be the guy with my eye falling out all the time.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And I actually had
hitting me like
I had an alternate casting for them. Our boys Key and Peele.
Oh, yes! Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely no doubt. Absolutely no doubt. That would be amazing. I still think one of the best comedy duos, Key and Peele in Toy Story, is glorious.
Oh, it's so funny.
Like, it's so funny.
All those scenes are amazing.
They really
are. And if we're going there, why not just let Jordan Peele direct it too?
Yeah. I mean, that's a very, very fair shout. That's
just
a
give
very
them
fair
everything.
Shout. Just give him everything.
Oh, Keira Knightley's character, Issa Rae.
Issa Rae. I adore her. I adore her.
I think she would be so lovely, like such a little, there would be like a whimsical, like awkwardness that would be just so genuine.
What's the name of the movie that she did with Kumail Nanjiani?
I know what you mean.
Get away or go away or
something.
Run away or something like that.
Something like that because I watched it as soon as it came out. I love her.
I think she is absolutely. You can't take your eyes off her in that movie. I like fell in love with her in that movie. I mean, I liked her show as well.
Yeah, Insecure.
Whatever that's called.
Insecure.
Yeah, Insecure. Yeah. Lovebirds.
Yeah. Lovebirds. Yeah, that was great. That was great.
So I had it completely wrong.
I did have one for Commodore Norrington. My man Jeffrey Wright. He's having like a full thing at the moment. Like he's in like every movie right now. Like every trailer I feel like I'm seeing, and I'm so happy about it because Westworld was dope. I love Westworld and I think he's generally the best part about it. I think
he's great.
He's phenomenal.
Yeah.
He's really great.
And I think he'd bring some really cool like some genuine like weights to his character, which I hope would not get destroyed like they did with the character in the later like films where he just became a parody of himself, like was just constantly like running from things and getting into trouble, where like the first film he's such a good villain, like Commodore Norrington. He's such a complicated character which just gets thrown out the window. So that was my pick for Commodore Norrington. I thought that would be kind of awesome.
Good stuff.
But we are very sadly, much to my chagrin, getting to the end of our time. I mean, people already know where they can find you on the internet. If they're following us, they're already following you. Like, that's, you know. But tell us about all of your stuff. If you could list all of your podcasts in like 10 seconds, I'd be so impressed.
Oh, that just sounds like a challenge. I do the /filmcast at /filmcast.com, talking about movies and TV shows.
Love it.
I do a video game podcast called DLC. Mm-hmm. You can find that at 5by5.tv/DLC. I do We Have Concerns, which is a comedy science show. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. And then The Dungeon Run. As I said, great jumping on point this week, September 9th. All the episodes are on YouTube. Just search for The Dungeon Run. They're also an audio podcast. I think it works great as an audio podcast. You can find it,
it does.
Anywhere That's you get audio podcasts by searching for The Dungeon Run. We are Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific time at caffeine.tv/The Dungeon Run live. And like I said, you can watch this 20-minute recap video that gets all the information of the story, all the characters. And I think it really captures what's special about our show as well. So just check that out. Just to use 20 minutes of your time. Check that out. You'll see our animatronic mind flayer introducing
it
and all of the wackiness that we do. You can find that. It's on the Caffeine Twitter feed. It's on my Twitter feed, which is at Jeff Cannata. It's also on my website, which is jeffcannata.com, spelled with two N's and one T.
That's amazing. I'm still blown away talking to you. Thank you so much for your time, Jeff. And like I said,
my
at the
pleasure.
Top, thank you for sharing us and sort of giving us, you know, helping us with our platform. It feels like an amazing thing to have had you on and to have your support of our show. And if you know, if you find yourself with nothing to do on the 12th of September, feel free to check out our live stream of Vulgardu.
Absolutely. I'm excited. That's so cool.
It's going to be amazing. So
the three of you do such a great job. I'm impressed that you hit the ground running on this very young show so professionally and so entertainingly. It's really a lovely product you're putting out, and kudos to all of you for doing that.
Thank you.
That's the best moment of my life. There it is.
Sweet.
Complete.
Thank you so much.
Done it. Thank you so much. That's amazing. So thank you so much for listening, Halflings. This has been another episode of Three Black Halflings. Thank you very much, Jeff Kanata, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.